I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. All right, really happy to be back now with Salem News journalist Paul Layton. Paul covering mostly Beverly News for the Salem News, but a lot of other stuff as well. Paul, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Rick. Yep, thanks for having me on.
Hey, listen, how was Thanksgiving? Because it was very muted and very quiet in our neighborhood, in my house. But it was, you know what, it was kind of interesting. First time since 78 I didn't do a Thanksgiving football game. But it was okay. It was sort of intimate. How was Thanksgiving with you guys?
Yeah, it was the same thing here. It was just, you know, our family, and so I think like a lot of other people, you know, but I did kind of miss the Thanksgiving, the high school football, too. You know, I used to go to, well, of course, I used to cover games back in the day, and then, but I would always go to the Beverly-Salem game, too, or at the least in the last few years, you know, put it on the radio.
You know? All right.
That was, it's strange, that was one of the biggest, you know, differences for me. I guess you kind of don't realize how it becomes a part of your life and a part of the, you know, tradition, you know. So I did miss that part of it.
Well, I know I learned about it when I first got hired over at WESX, and I never realized how many radios around the area, not just in Beverly and Salem, but how many radios were on in the morning while people were preparing the meal that had the Beverly-Salem game on. And it was just... it's just such a tradition. We'll get it back. We're close. We'll get it back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's got to be interesting to have football in the late winter, early spring. You know, I'll be interested to see how that works out.
Yeah, well, I've got all my winter gear lined up, so I'll be ready. I'll be okay. Ready. All right, let's get to it, Paul. Some big stuff going on in your coverage, and one thing, a couple of stories you've been working on consistently for a while that have continued to make big news. But I want to start with today's article in the paper, if I could, please. There's a race on, if I could call it that, in Beverly to replace John Freitas as the Ward 6 city councilor. And you have a really fascinating story today. I wonder if you'd talk about it.
Yeah, sure. Well, the story is that in Ward 6, John Freitas is stepping down at the end of the year, at the end of the month, in a couple of weeks, because he's moving to another ward in the city, and he still has 1 year left on his two-year term. So the city charter says in that case that the city council picks a successor. And it's only happened, I think, 30 years ago in the city. And ironically, you know, John Freitas was the guy that was chosen for that position 30 years ago when the person who was elected actually passed away, John Freitas was picked. So anyway, it's coming around again with this unusual selection process. And 10 people had put their names in, you know, to be a candidate, 10 residents of Ward 6. And the story that I had today is one of those candidates, John Tamilio, had withdrew his name from consideration and said that he's supporting Dominic Copeland, who is the only you know, person of color among the candidates. And he said what, you know, Tamilio said, he sent an email to councilors saying that he thinks at this time when, you know, Beverly, just like, you know, just like everywhere else in the country, is sort of coming to a reckoning and, you know, on the subject of racial injustice and racial equality. And here's an opportunity to have a black person on the city council and have your representation that the council has never had before. As far as we know, there's never been a person of color on the Beverly City Council for all these years. And so it just brings up that subject. The council's in an unusual position, first of all, where they have to pick, you know, one of their fellow members. And then you have this dynamic where you have, you know, the chance to have a person of, you know, color and, you know, to be on the board for the first time. So it's going to be interesting. The council's going to vote on December 21st at the meeting. They're trying to come up with a process for how they do it. I know this came up in Salem 4 or 5 years ago when the council had to pick somebody, and the voting went on till like 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
It's something like 100+ rounds of voting. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out
You know, there's that aspect, the overall global aspect of that, you know, as you pull away from it. But your article fascinated me, Paul, because of the background of Mr. Copeland, plus his reaction. And I wonder if you might talk about that, because it seemed as though he were a little taken aback that someone is pulling out just because that he's in the race for the good, for the plus,
right.
And also his background from Pennsylvania.
Right. Yeah, he said that he, as you said, he was a little, he seemed surprised, and I think he was appreciative, but he also felt a little badly that somebody, you know, pulled out on his account, you know. But he did say that there needs to be more representation on the city council, and he thinks that's important. He said that he's talked to other black people in Beverly who feel that their voices aren't being heard, and you know, this is a chance to get somebody on the city council and to represent that point of view. He grew up in Pennsylvania, in which he said there's still a Ku Klux Klan leader who lives in his hometown. I think it was Reading,
Pennsylvania.
Reading, Pennsylvania,
yeah.
Right? And he said that, you know, that his family, I mean, like a lot of black families, and they dealt with racism and they overcame that, and so he's been through that whole experience, and that's the point. That's what John Camilleri was saying, is that you can have somebody like this that has this perspective that you know, literally never had on the Beverly City Council before.
Well, if nothing else, Paul, it's a great positive story for both of these men. I love the way it you know, you presented it, and really exciting stuff, and it's going to be interesting. We'll see how many hundreds of ballots that they have. And when, yeah. When did you say that is? December 21?
December 21st, yes.
Okay.
On Monday night.
Oh, my. Well, we'll
yeah.
Stay tuned to that. All right.
Yes.
All right, a couple of other things that have been really big newsmakers. I want to go, I'm going to save the Varian story for last, but excuse me, the McDonald restaurants on the waterfront there, it's by the Salem Bridge, it's down.
It's down. Or at least the last time I went by a couple days ago, and it was half down, but it's basically demolished. And the significance of that is, you know, I've been writing about this for 20 years, and I always say I think readers get, you know, tired of it, because you hear, oh, you know, restaurant, this permit's been granted, this board approved that, and then nothing ever happens. There's been all kinds of, you know, legal, you know, problems that have hung up.
Sounds like the 2020 year. Election. All right, there we go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so when the building started going down, if you looked on Facebook, there's like all this, you know, reaction and these comments, and so there's a sign that something is happening literally on the waterfront after years of inaction. I mean, that McDonald's closed in 1995, I think it was, and it's been basically empty. The city has owned it all these years, and so the restaurant has all the permits it needs, and the restaurant owner, Marty Bloom, who's owned a lot of restaurants in his life and started a lot of them, said he plans to start building it next spring and to open in the summer of 2022. So that's, I guess that's going to happen now. And at the same time, on the other side of the Beverly-Salem Bridge, at the foot of what they call Goat Hill in Beverly, these two new apartment buildings have gone up, and one of them recently opened and people started moving in. So that's a big change. Yeah, that's another piece of property, beautiful property, right on the point on the ocean there, like the confluence of the Danvers River and Beverly Harbor, right near the bridge. It's a great spot, and people are starting to move in, and a really good part for people that can't afford the $3,000 or $4,000 a month it costs to move in there in some cases is, one of the requirements of them to build that was to include a public walkway. And I went down there last week. I took a video. And in fact, it's not 100% complete, but you can go down there now. There are dedicated parking spots, and there are benches. And it's beautifully landscaped. And you get these views in the city of Beverly that nobody's ever had before, unless you were, you know, worked at the factory that was there back in the 1940s. That factory actually worked on the Manhattan Project. And
oh, wow.
The country's first project. Bomb,
yeah.
You know, interestingly enough. So those two things, you know, going on at the same time, the apartment buildings going up and the McDonald's restaurant going down, is a big milestone on that waterfront, which people have thought for years is underutilized. It's a beautiful spot, but you had two places that were essentially vacant and, you know,
yeah.
Two beautiful spots, and now something is finally taking place down there.
Well, when I worked at WESX, I went by there every day in the summertime and every weekend, you know, during the rest of the year. And I'm sad to say I haven't been to the bridge lately because you don't get out that much. So
good news.
All right. I can't wait to go see all that stuff. Well, the other story, Paul, is of particular interest because you hinted at it off the record a couple of months ago because you weren't quite sure where it was going to go. But, boy, has it taken off. So tell me about the Varian property in Beverly.
Sure, yeah. This is a piece of property that's on Sawyer Road in Beverly. It's right off Route 128. If you're traveling north toward Gloucester, you see it on the right. It's called CPI. Now is the company that owns it. But anyway, it's significant because it used to be a company called Varian, so we still refer to it as the Varian property. But there's been contamination on that property and in the groundwater under the property for years, and the state mandated that it be cleaned up back in 1992. So this cleanup has been going on ever since then. And the company, which is Varian, they split up into three companies. They're now out in California. They actually sold the property years ago, but they're still responsible for the cleanup. So you have this company in California. It's a $3 billion company that's responsible for this cleanup of this piece of property in Beverly that's now owned by another company that's operating on it. So it's kind of confusing. But for years, I've seen these reports that the company is required to file with the state every 6 months. Well, how's the cleanup going? And I never thought anything of it. All these years I've seen them and done nothing on it. And then a few months ago, and I'm not sure why, I decided to look into it, basically saying, this is the cleanup that's been going on for 25 years. Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
I know sometimes these big environmental cleanups do take decades, but I just started asking questions. The bottom line, to try to speed it up, is I had a couple of experts help me and looked at this and said, the situation is not getting better after 25 plus years. Like, something's wrong in the nearby neighborhoods. These people said the homes should be tested because the groundwater migrates, you know, underground obviously, but the chemicals can seep into the basement and into the homes. The homes were tested more than 20 years ago, but not since then. So the bottom line is the state, after the story ran, the state said, we're going to come and test the homes to make sure. And they've been doing that the last 2 days. And at several homes in the area, I talked to some of the neighbors who had their homes tested, and the state said that they're going to turn around and get the results in 24 to 48 hours. So we'll know by the end of the week what the status is of the air quality inside those homes.
And we'll have to get our edition of the Salem News, because that's coming up as we record this on Wednesday. My goodness gracious. So that's ongoing, and it's potentially fairly serious. I hope it. Now who's notifying the homeowners about this stuff, Paul, and how are they getting involved in the homeowners themselves?
Yes, it's actually the state, the Department of Environmental Protection. That's the agency that oversees this cleanup. That's being conducted by a private company that's been hired by Varian. But the state, after my story, the state reached out to the city and asked for their help in reaching out to residents and to inform them that the state wants to come in and test their homes. They obviously had to ask for permission. So the state has worked with the city, and they sent out information to all the residents in the area saying that they wanted to come and test. The residents had the option. If they didn't want to let people in the house because of COVID, the state would actually give them this little kit where they could actually, in a pump, I'm not sure how it works, and actually take the air sample themselves in their basement and get it inside this little bag and give it to the state officials. So that process has been going on for the last 2 days as we speak, on Monday and Tuesday of this week. I don't know how many homes have been tested. The state said they were also going to test a couple of commercial properties that are right next to the Varian property. So I don't know exactly how many, and we won't know the results until probably Friday, which is actually a quick turnaround. I was actually surprised.
Yeah.
So we'll see what transpires. I mean, it may turn out, and I hope it does, and I actually kind of think it will, that the air is probably fine in these homes. But the question was that it had been more than 20 years since the homes were tested, and since the chemical levels are still high in the groundwater at various locations on the property, it's the state did agree that we need to make sure that everything's okay inside these.
Wow. Homes. I'm not going to ask you to go over the chemicals that you have in the article, so I'm going to link to your article, and people can check it out to see the chemicals in the ground and so on that's working on the cleanup. But jeepers, that's now in your in your research and your work on this this story, Paul, have most people been cooperative with you and saying, yeah, this is fine, and they've been upfront about stuff?
Well, no, the company Varian has not been. They haven't really commented. They referred me to their public relations people, who I think are based in New York City, and they weren't saying much of anything. And in fact, for this latest story, they just emailed me back this morning with just this generalized statement saying that they're working with the state and the city, and they want, to make sure everything's safe. So they haven't really, Varian this is, they haven't really said a lot. And that's one of the interesting things about this is how this whole cleanup process works. And so this is a company that, they, like I said, they sold this land 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
And they're out in California.
Yeah.
Responsible for the cleanup, and they hire these private companies to conduct the cleanup. That's the system that the state has put in,
mm-hmm.
and the state has oversight, but to be fair to the state in some ways, I mean, there are a lot of these cleanups, big and small, around the country, around the state, hundreds of them. You might have a dry cleaner that uses these solvents, and they've discovered that there's some, cleanup is necessary. So, there are small ones that take a few days or a few weeks, but then there are these. What's unusual about this is that it's taking more than 25 years.
I think
the state has statistics. I think only 6% of their cleanups that they've overseen have taken this long. And then you have to question, why is it taking so long? And are they doing the right things? Are they spending enough money to try to clean this? Is Varian just like kicking the can down the road and saying, well, we'll do what we have to do and follow our reports, but it's really not getting cleaned up? And ultimately, the public has a right to know, which is why I wrote this story. At the beginning of this process back in the 90s, they held public meetings and the mayor was involved. People were speaking out, and it was big stories, before I was covering it. And then over the years, the whole story just kind of got lost, and people admitted they just stopped paying attention. There were these reports that filed you can get online or in the library. I went down the library. There were these three-ring binders, dozens and dozens and dozens of them, with hundreds and hundreds of pages.
No kidding.
Nobody can understand, you know? So while they're fulfilling their obligation to file these reports, but nobody can understand the reports. And the only way I get the story is I asked a couple of people, experts, to look at them, and they both looked at them and said, yikes, these numbers, why are they so high 20 plus years
later? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, good for you. I'm sure there are a few people who are a little nervous, but I'm sure there are other people who are thanking you for this. And I find it fascinating because, as you mentioned, the whole bureaucratic process and, how business is involved and so on. And I'm sure that that this is indicative of something that that people need to know about and people need to follow up on. So, I appreciate that, Paul. That's fascinating, man.
Thanks.
All right. Anything else you want to mention here before we let this thing go?
I think that's those are the big ones we're working on. We're always looking at trying to assess the impact of the coronavirus. There's lots of testing going on. Salem has had one of those state testing sites, and Beverly actually did one of their own last week at Lynch Park in Beverly, and I went down there, and the line was down the street. It's like a two-hour wait. It was actually a run. The people I talked to online said they were actually pleased. People are kind of used to waiting 2 hours in a car to get tested, but, cities and schools and businesses, we all know this. They're all struggling with this day-to-day, and it's kind of hard to keep up with it in terms of writing stories. Schools are going in person, they're flipping back to remote, and they go in person again. And that's the ongoing biggest story.
We're
covering, just trying to keep up with things.
Your sister newspaper up in Newburyport has an article today about how superintendents are viewing this thing, and it's not really a good look. But it's everybody knows how difficult it is. And speaking of lines, Paul, if you've ever been to Trader Joe's, then you've got some good practice in terms of learning how to wait. So it's not, we get used to this after a while.
I have been in that line. Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. That is Paul Layton of the Salem News. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.